And welcome back. Always enjoy spending time with you. It just happens to be the last day of 2025. Lee Rogers, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, Ryan.
So if someone says, I'll see you next year, are you allowed to slap them for that stupid joke?
No. Okay. Salt is never necessary.
Okay. One person did have a question for you on the texting. It said, Ryan, ask Lee, who is the HVAC sponsor for 98.9 WORD? Does anyone come to mind that you can think of?
We have several, so I don't want to single anyone out, so I don't offend anybody. So.
Keep listening then. You'll hear. And I see some of these other text messages coming in. Thank you for all the ones that are coming in. But they asked for you specifically. I thought, oh, maybe Lee has a sponsorship. I saw this in the New York Post. Sister Wives star Christine Brown reveals she's related to her ex-husband, Cody Brown. Okay. Are you a Sister Wives watcher on television? No. TLC?
Nope.
They said they're related. You were related. Hold on. Why would you admit that? Why would you come out and say, wait a minute, so I was engaged in physical sexual activity with my cousin. Why? Prolonged, by the way.
Nobody needed to know, okay?
Is that like the least weird thing about that whole situation?
Probably.
The interesting thing about all of that, I don't know what he did for a living, but he had a whole, compound in a cul-de-sac, and I'm sure the TV show helped pay for some of that, but I thought, man, this guy must make a lot of money be able to take care of all those kids and all those wives.
Absolutely.
And things. But I don't think, even if given the chance, let's say polygamy was legal, I don't even think that interests me one bit. Why would you want, let's say, two or three wives giving you a hard time? Why would you multiply the struggles of marriage and say, that's what I want more of?
Yeah. And think of all the other complications of those relationships. It's just I'm done.
And how do you keep things straight? Because my memory is not great. I would misremember, oh boy, wrong wife.
Yeah. Ugh. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to pay for that one.
Definitely, yeah. I could
don't like
to that.
All right. You're a news guy, so I wanted to get your take on this. And I'm not a fan of Business Insider, but I'll credit them for the article. And here's the headline. TikTok has dethroned YouTube and Instagram and become the top social app for news among young people. So they say that TikTok rolled out some tools for news publishers and community fact-checking earlier this year. Social media app previously trailed behind other platforms, and now they are up on top among young Americans, according to Pew data. Yeah. What do you think about young people getting their news that way?
That scares me. Of course, the problem has been going on for a long time. Our large part of our problem is that the vast majority of the news consuming in this country is headlines. And print media has known this for a long time. And print media was always using the headline to get you in there to read the story, or at least to look at your paper or magazine or whatever. And many times the headlines at best are deceiving, if not right, false.
Right.
And I've even seen many times where it's obvious the person that writes the headlines does not even read the story many times. This whole thing about TikTok, okay, that's fine. Are you getting real news? Or are you simply looking at the headline and looking at the first 10 or 12 seconds and then scrolling on to the next video? Because if you are, you're not getting the context, you're not getting the depth, you're not getting the understanding of the story. And that's what the fear is. I think it's interesting what social media has done for honestly, this whole situation with the alleged fraud in Minnesota probably would not have been covered if it were not for social media and this 21-year-old guy that uncovered the story.
Yeah.
And this is amazing. This is what we thought that the future of journalism was going to be, that, everybody is their own journalist now, the World Wide Web. You can you don't have to have all the, millions of dollars of newsrooms and TV cameras and all this other thing. You can just go out with your phone and cover stories. And if you can document what you've done, it's real news. But if you're only looking at headlines in the first few seconds of a story, you're not getting context. You're not getting any real knowledge of the issue. And that's what I'm concerned about.
It's interesting that you mentioned this independent journalism thing. I think we've seen spurts of it where it's been used effectively, like right. It's a really good case with Minneapolis and the fraud going on at these daycare centers. That's the one use for it. But ultimately, when you're on these different platforms, so there's going to be a big difference in news of what you see on Twitter versus TikTok. If you're on, let's say, X, and I say Twitter still, it's just it's going to be like that. I can't help it. But if you look at the news on Twitter, I give them a lot of credit because what you could do is you can ask Grok, their AI, fact check this for me, and it'll give you a real time, here's what the nuts and bolts are. I really do appreciate that. And I think it does a better job of showing you what's really trending without filtering out things that may not be friendly to the left-leaning audience. So if you go to TikTok, I think they're going to only amplify things that are friendly to that type of young audience, which is sometimes a lot of left-leaning type of stories, and it's going to give you the wrong impression. Here it is. So it's between 18 and 29-year-olds. That's what they call young adults, 18 to 29-year-olds. 43% say they consume news on TikTok, 41% on Facebook and YouTube, 40% for Instagram, and then there's a big drop-off. Twitter is at 21%, Reddit at 18%. So all these other ones, you can say the curation of that is going to be more left-leaning, which may give you the wrong impression if that's where you're only getting your news.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes the stories are completely false. I mean, one of the stories that comes to mind here is the story about, I forgot if it was like Detroit, Chicago, whatever, that ICE had gone into a daycare center and arrested a teacher. And that was the headline for about six hours. And turns out that story was absolutely false, that there actually was a person that authorities were searching for. They had located the vehicle. She pulled off on the side of the road on the street there and ran into a daycare center. She was not an employee. She wasn't a teacher. There were no kids. She was in the lobby. And they, you know, she was escaping law enforcement, who had apparently had a valid reason to stop and you know, detain her. And they got her in the lobby. But the story was that a daycare center teacher had been arrested in front of her children. That was all false. But the headline was there. The left-wing media got the narrative they wanted, and that's what the impression will be. Not the facts of the story, but it'll be what that false headline was. That's the concern I have.
I know, and it's a very valid concern, I think, in a lot of ways. It's tough sometimes to read an entire article.
Yes, it is.
So the headline left just suffice.
Right.
Do you like it? Remember the old TV shows and cartoons when they would show a headline as part of a way to further the plot, and the newspaper would spin
as it
got progressively larger to the screen, and then it would stop and you read the headline? Yeah. I always liked those moments. Like, those were some of my favorite parts of old television shows. I want my news to be consumed that way. If I'm reading news on a social media platform, not that I'm on TikTok, but if I was on TikTok, I would want the news to spin on my screen before showing me, just to get my attention.
I'm sure there's an app for that. Somebody will do that for you.
Oh, my goodness. I shouldn't say that out loud. Yeah. That's going to be the new thing, like to grab kids' attention.
Exactly.
We really want you to see this, so we're going to spin this ad aggressively.
That's right.
So you stare at it until it stops spinning. Yeah. And there's going to be people throwing up aggressively all over the place. It's going to trigger epilepsy.
There you go. That's it. Yeah.
Well, Lee Rogers, I don't know what you're doing tonight on New Year's Eve, but I can tell you I'll be sleeping and getting ready for the show tomorrow. We only got a couple more hours of the morning show here, and I look forward to spending the next hour with you as well.
I as well. Thank you.
All right. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Tara. And I thought this was kind of interesting. In 1998, they did a poll of what the future would look like by 2025. I'm going to read you some of the results of that coming up. Also have a couple of other clips. Where do we stand when it comes to Russia and Ukraine? Well, not great. And Bo Cabala is a expert in political science. He teaches at Tarleton State University in Texas. And I want to talk to a couple of political issues that are going on and get his perspective on that. Coming up, I'm Ryan Recker, filling in on WORD. And welcome back. Happy to be with you. And I got to say, there's a lot going on around the world right now. There's fraud, there's abuse, there's everywhere you look, it seems like there's fraud everywhere. Do you sometimes sit back and wonder, am I the only one that's not defrauding the government? Am I the crazy one for not ripping the government off? Should I be frauding them out of millions of dollars? Because it seems like it's pretty easy to do right about now. I got a couple of things I wanted to get out there about what's going on in the world. And this is kind of interesting because the Sun's reporting this. I know it's more of like a tabloid, but still, it says Russia threatens to kill Zelensky and parade his body after stirring up fury over denied Ukrainian plot to blitz Putin. So what we saw was Vladimir Zelensky was in Mar-a-Lago on Sunday. They did a press conference. You have them saying they're about 95% there when it comes to Ukraine agreeing to the terms the United States put together to end this war between Russia and Ukraine. Zelensky later was on Fox News, Brett Baer, and said, I don't think Putin wants to end this. I don't think he wants peace. Then later, Putin says there were bombs that went off close to the home trying to assassinate Vladimir Putin. Zelensky denies that, says Putin's lying. Now Russia's threatening to kill Zelensky and saying that because of these bombs going over their roof, which, by the way, Ukraine said was false, the drone attacks were ordered. Now there's power outages and other attacks that are continuing to go on as they are trying to negotiate peace. So you have on one side the Ukrainian parliament that may not go with United States peace plan deal. You have Russia who may not go with the United States peace plan deal. You have Russia that may actively start ramping up their efforts when it comes to attacks between the two as they go back and forth. Not looking great. And I know that Donald Trump said he'd be willing to go talk to the parliament over there in the Ukraine in order to try to convince them to go the extra mile, but it might be for naught because it's not looking great. And on top of that, this is a report from MSN, and Putin burns Trump with embarrassing details of phone chat. So Russian dictator Vladimir Putin claimed in a phone call with President Trump that Kyiv attacked one of their official residences, a claim that Ukraine denied. Russia read out aloud a call said that Putin, 73, told Trump, 79, that Ukraine launched a terrorist attack using drones to target the Russian president's residence. Kremlin further said that Trump was shocked by the news, literally outraged. Trump said he couldn't even imagine such crazy actions and has stated he'll undoubtedly impact Americans' approach to working with Zelensky, whom, as Trump himself said, thank God the current administration hasn't given tomahawks, the Kremlin read out loud. So now the Kremlin's saying during this phone call when Putin gave them the news, it seems like Donald Trump is siding with Russia, saying that, well, thank goodness we didn't give him the tomahawks, because imagine what the damage they would have done in that instance. There's two different ways to look at this. One way to look at this is to say that Donald Trump's playing both sides because he just wants to get this deal done, period. I think that's the likely number one scenario of what's happening here. Scenario number two, he's just reacting to the news and he's taking his word for it without seeing U.S. intelligence first. And if you take Putin by his word, then that's the reaction that you would have. Like, this ain't, come on, man. I'm working with them and they're just, maybe it's not you, Russia, that's the problem. Maybe it's Ukraine. It's almost like when you have a friend and maybe there's some kind of like disagreement inside the friend group and you like both sides. And one friend said, I can't believe this person did that. And you're like, oh, totally, that's terrible. But then you hear the other side of it and the other account of it. And you're like, this is totally different than what the other person told me. I don't know who to believe. It could have been one of those moments where you're just on the phone with them and you're giving your knee-jerk reaction. That could be another, I guess, subplot likely scenario. But I think most likely Donald Trump just wants to get this deal done. I don't think he's trying to side with Russia or Ukraine, any one side more than the other. He just wants this to stop. He wants this to cut it out. Guys, stop bombing each other. This is stupid, and the United States doesn't want to be involved in this forever. I think it's as simple as that. And on Ukraine, Scott Adams explains why Trump repeating that they're making progress is a great persuasive tool. So let me play this. As other people have different opinions on what might be happening here. Here's Scott Adams. Let me play this for you. Okay.
Speaking of persuasion, let's talk about what might be happening there with Ukraine. So here's something that Trump said I thought was interestingly persuasive. When asked if they're making progress, he always claims yes, even when it's no, which is good persuasion. So even if he believed they were not making progress, it would be smarter if he wanted progress someday to say that they are. Because he could actually talk people into thinking he might be making progress, even if they're involved in the progress, even if they're involved and they don't see it. So if he just keeps repeating, we're making progress, then even if they had not made progress, people are going to start to think, well, he thinks we're making progress. Maybe we're making progress. And if people start thinking that progress is happening, it makes it much easier for progress to happen. If people believe that nobody believed there was progress, then they would have all the freedom in the world to say, well, I don't see any progress. Where's the progress? But if somebody that prominent says, oh, yeah, we're making progress. Look at that progress. I don't have the details yet, but progress all over the place. So persuasion-wise, he's right on point.
Okay, so that was Scott Adams, which, by the way, you know Scott Adams. He is not in good shape right now, unfortunately, and he announced earlier that he's dealing with a lot of health issues, and he's not going to win that fight. He's pretty much conceded. It's only a matter of time by now. He says he's paralyzed below the waist. If you know Scott Adams, he's been a commentator on social media for a long time. He wrote the Dilbert comics, and I think the short-run television show as well, but not looking good. And especially when you look at the videos and where he is now, it's very evident that he's at the final stage, unfortunately, but still making sense. I will give him a lot of credit because, you know, you never know. It might be one of the last messages he puts out there. Maybe that would be a nice thing to find peace, but is peace possible is a different question on all of this. Trump on Russia-Ukraine peace plans. It seems like there's just a couple of things he believes are holding things up. Let me find that clip real quick. Oh, I don't see it. Well, he said there's just a couple of thorny issues, and maybe that's why they say they're just near the precipice, but not quite there yet. All right. When we come back, I do want to make sure we spend some time and enough time with our guest. It's someone that is a professor at Tarleton University, State University in Texas, and he's a political science teacher. I'm always interested in the things the kids are learning in the classroom. And as an expert in political science, what does he think about a couple of these different things that are happening here, including Ukraine and Russia? Bo Cabala joins us after the break. I'm Ryan Ranker, filling in on WORD. Don't go anywhere. It's New Year's Eve. And I got a message from my friend in Australia. He lives close to Sydney. He said, Happy New Year. They're already ringing in the new year over there. So places across the world bringing it in now. Joining us now is an expert in political science. In fact, he teaches at Tarleton State University in Texas, Dr. Bo Cabala. Good morning and Happy New Year to you.
Hey, good morning, Ryan. Thanks so much for having me. Happy New Year.
I wanted to talk about a few different things with you. In particular, we're getting close to the end of 2025, and one of the big pushes towards the end of the year was the Epstein files. And
yes.
Part of the interesting thing about it, of course, there's a political aspect to it because politicians may be implicated in that sort of thing. The other aspect is the files themselves trying to get out on time, redactions going across and maybe seeing what some of the redacted parts were, what that means, what's the implications of it. So I wanted to get your thoughts on how you think the administration is handling these sort of files and maybe some of the political implications of them.
Absolutely. Well, I agree with Tom Bevin at RealClearPolitics.com, and I think he's been reliably on point here in general, a supporter of the Trump administration. Has the release of the files been bungled? Yes. Does that mean there's a conspiracy? No. And so those two things, in my opinion, are true at the same time with some interesting political implications. But you're talking about millions of pages of files. You are talking about the need for redactions to protect the identities of victims. And then there's also a national security connection that we could explore. So I don't see evidence of a conspiracy, but do I think there's a concern about how some loyal Trump voters may be responding? I think that's true as well.
You know, when we look at 2025 in the release of documents, we had MLK, JFK, RFK, UFOs. I mean, there's been a lot of government documents that have been under seal for a long time that have been released. Epstein files are somewhat relatively new. You know, I think it's par for the course. It seems like the administration really is trying to release these things. And I understand when there's millions of documents, it may not come out as fast as you would like. But keep in mind, we also had redacted and unreleased information from the JFK assassination that took decades to come out. In comparison, yes, relative to that, it seems like this is coming out pretty quick.
Well, absolutely. And really, let me say, compared to, you know, the previous two administrations, you have seen massive disclosures. One of the victims, Ms. Farmer, in fact, mentioned she felt vindicated because the release files do show an FBI investigation very early on. And her claim has been, had more people been aware of that, you know, some of Jeffrey Epstein's crimes might have been thwarted. So a lot of transparency here. Now, the thing people miss sometimes is conflicting parts of the law. One insisted on, yes, transparency by a deadline, and that deadline has passed. But there's also the provisions in the Transparency Act about protecting victims' identities. And then also national security considerations can delay release. We have some evidence. Jeffrey Epstein in the late 1970s, early 1980s, working at Bear Stearns, was helping the CIA with some financial operations. So a lot going on here. And yes, I think we should extend the administration grace.
Yep. We're getting close to the end of 2025, coming up to 2026. When you look back at this past year, I mean, there's been so many different news stories that have been happening. Let's look at it. Okay, so you have, you know, peace deals going on, you have bombing of ships, you have a president coming in for a non-consecutive term, the first time that's happened since Grover Cleveland, a long time. You have a big spending bills, you have big packages, the big beautiful bill, you have immigration, you have, there's so much that's happened in 2025. As opposed to you ranking some of the moments that stand out to you, I'm curious, what do you think when you're teaching a course in your, you know, your political science and you work at Tarleton State University, what are the things that I guess the students grab onto the most? Is there anything that surprises you when it comes to their aspect of what interests them of everything that's going on?
Sure. I thought in terms of especially the more advanced students, the peace deal in the Middle East was, you know, both something of significance and surprising to many. I don't want to say students tend to be more jaded these days than 20, 30 years ago, but they have a healthy skepticism and about what they consume and in the news. So I think that was the landmark moment, and to see how unconventionally, in many ways, the Trump administration using people like Steve Witkoff, who doesn't have a traditional a diplomatic background, was able to push for, and admittedly it's a tenuous peace, but a peace nevertheless. I think that was very significant. And then let me mention one other moment, and that was Zohran Mamdani in the Oval Office. So speaking to so many interesting developments, there's the fact that a democratic socialist has won the mayor's office in New York, but then also to see the civility that was modeled and on display as President Trump invited him to the White House. Those two moments really, really stand out to me.
Wow. Yeah, the Mamdani thing, I guess I wouldn't have thought about that, but because for me, as someone that's a little bit older, I look at it much differently than I guess someone that's younger. What do you think the political leanings are in your class? I'm sure you can kind of tell based on their interests. Is it split? Is it more left-leaning, more right-leaning? How do you normally see the makeup of a classroom?
Well, and I've been surprised to see among the advanced students at Tarleton, one might assume, I probably did, that in rural Texas, I'd have mostly conservative students. It's 50-50, so I try to speak across the spectrum. And to see the younger progressive students, especially interested in, you know, a position that for decades, the Democratic Party in the U.S. insisted was not a good idea for the sake of gatekeeping and economic growth, to see young people embrace socialism is startling to me as somebody whose family came from Eastern Europe in the 1980s. So it's, and they're very smart. They're charitable. They're compassionate. But this is a shift, I think, in American politics to see significant numbers of young people sort of rush into this sort of set of views. So the conservative students, mostly concerned, I think, about Nick Fuentes and some of the tendencies on the far right. I haven't had anybody on the right in my class who's sort of, you know, embraced a full-on Nick Fuentes point of view. But I think the shift on the left right now, we'll see where it goes. That stood out to me a little more.
That's interesting. Yeah. And I'm guessing after the whole Charlie Kirk thing happening at a college university campus, shooting, the assassination, someone that was talking their political beliefs during discourse, I'm guessing that shook a lot of the students up. I'm hoping it did.
I think so. And really extraordinarily, I mean, just to see, we had struggled at Tarleton State to establish a turning point chapter for many years. There's one now that's thriving and the numbers are growing. So I'll give a shout out to Dr. Rudy Tarpley, who's a faculty advisor. And I think just for people who may not have known a lot about Charlie Kirk, to watch some of the YouTube videos where, yes, the exchanges are spirited and heated sometimes, but he's listening to people who disagree vehemently with him. I think people are thinking and reimagining civil discourse in important ways as a result of that tragic event.
Right. Do you mind holding on after the break? We can continue our conversation. I'd enjoy doing
that. Great.
He's a expert in political science, teaches at Tarleton State University in Texas. I'm always interested in that breakdown of the classrooms. Very fascinating to me. There's so many other topics we can bring up. Bo Cabala, Dr. Bo Cabala, is going to join us and continue on next. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Tara. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to reach us on the Common Sense Retirement Planning text line at 800-905-0989. I'm Ryan Recker. Don't go anywhere. And welcome back. Want to welcome our guest back on the line, an expert in political science. He teaches at Tarleton State University in Texas, Dr. Bo Cabala. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
You know, I talk to my dad every day. He's 77. And you know how brings up every time we're on the phone, he says, did you see what silver price is right now? He brings that up all the time. He's so invested in it. Gold prices, silver prices right now. Precious metals are rallying. That's an interesting way to end 2025. And what do you think that means for 26 in our currency?
Absolutely. And I think it could mean a lot. It's a staggering increase when you look at, silver skyrocketing by more than 100%, hitting, $84 an ounce before it corrected a little bit, gold going beyond $4,500 an ounce. I mean, the fact is, the dollar has lost value relative to other currencies around the world. So it's something along the lines of 10%. So number one, I think we're looking at a kind of financial multipolarity that, maybe we haven't seen in a very long time. But I think it also points to some technological possibilities that, 2026 may be the breakthrough year. Where is silver especially valued and used? It's in these data centers. It's in these processes that are supporting the AI revolution. And so I think that's on. I think artificial intelligence, potentially powering robots in car manufacturing plants. It's already happening in China. That world may be upon us in 2026. So that in a big way.
Yeah. Earlier in the show, I was talking about Ukraine and Russia and kind of how things are playing out right now. It's really fascinating the way that Donald Trump is handling this. So, if you look at the different foreign affairs we're involved with right now, we got the drug boats, we got Venezuela, we have Iran, we have Israel and Gaza, we have China to deal with. And then you add Russia and Ukraine on top of that. So one of the things that are interesting is you have Zelensky at Mar-a-Lago, and they say they're close to agreeing to the United States peace plan deal. And then on the Russia side, from all the sounds of it, it doesn't sound like they're anywhere close to agreeing to any sort of deal. So where do you think that's headed?
And I agree with you that sometimes as we've come closer to a deal. There's been continued bombing of Kiev or even Western Ukrainian cities. I think it's interesting that this time the Russians are affirming at the same time that President Trump and President Zelensky are, you know, confirming that, you know, these are the final stages of the conflict. Now two really thorny issues that I could see prolonging the conflict: the status of territory in Donetsk Oblast. Russia is saying Ukrainian forces need to withdraw. There's two major cities there still, Slovyansk and Kramatorsk, with about 300,000 people. And if you're Ukraine, I mean, do you just unilaterally withdraw? And then also control of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. So I do think, in considering the breakthrough that occurred in the Middle East, you know, we have reason to be cautiously optimistic, but there's a lot that could kind of derail this and just contribute to an ongoing dynamic. I agree with you on that.
Yeah. So looking at, I guess, things that are just revealing itself in 2025, there's a lot of historical moments that happen there. Is there anything that you think 2026 could happen? Do you have any predictions of some of the likely things that may happen that should be on our radar?
Well, and so you mentioned, you know, silver prices, and I think that's connected to what's happening in Ukraine, just because, you know, big steps towards a multipolar geopolitical order. And it might not be a sudden dramatic moment, but, you know, people really ask about moving away from the post-World War II international security architecture. You know, I don't think we'll see the dollar stop being the major reserve currency. I don't think we'll see China invade Taiwan, but I think it could be sort of this ongoing movement towards a reshaping of the world order. And it's unsettling to elites. It involves dislocations for everyday folks. But I think that's the major trend that we're seeing.
Okay. You know, by the way, if people wanted to look you up online, things like that, if they wanted to reach out to you, where can they go?
So, and I'm not sure if providing my cell phone is a good idea. Not a good idea, but my email is that a best practice. I can certainly provide my email. Let me go ahead and do that with your permission.
That's the thing. Sometimes people want to reach out to you. They look at social media, things like that. But if that's not something you really do all that much, don't worry about it. I know.
Well,
I like to. Give your website.
So, yeah, it's bzkabbalah.org, actually. So my first initial, middle initial, and then last name, kabbalah.org. Can I mention one more thing, Ryan, that
yes.
I think might be significant? And it's kind of happening under the surface. And you mentioned Charlie Kirk, and I think sort of the importance of that tragic moment can't be overstated. You know, I think it's been happening quietly, but to see the federal government under Donald Trump funding, you know, to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars, a lot of these civic institutes that are proliferating across the country. So Arizona State University has, you know, the Center for Civic and Economic Thought and Leadership. UT Austin in Texas has, you know, the School of Civic Leadership. Often these are institutes that have been mandated by state legislatures, and now the federal government is stepping in a big way, especially after the Charlie Kirk assassination, to say there's money available at the federal level to support the teaching of civics.
That's fantastic.
And that's,
I apologize for the sake of time we got to go, but I think that's a fantastic thing that people need to know. Dr. Kabbalah, thank you on WORD.
Mr. Rick, thank you so much. Appreciate you.